This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The day today is May 20th, 1982. The interview is taking place in Portland, Oregon, and is being conducted by Donna Maloney. What is your full name, please?
Gerda Gutterberg Fagerstrand.
Okay, would you spell that, please?
G-E-R-D-A, and my maiden name was Gutterberg, G-O-T-T-E-B-E-R-G, and my married name is Fagerstrand, F-A-R-E-S-T-R-A-N-D. Of course, in Norwegian, it would be F-A-R.
All right.
And I was born in Måløy, which is south of Stad, which is now it's called West Cape.
Mm-hmm. Which part of Finland, Norway is that?
That is the outmost western part of Norway, where it goes just into the North Sea. You can't go any further before you get to Halifax, I guess.
What year were you born?
I was born in 1909.
Mm-hmm. Is that a farming area there, or what is
Well, there was a few small farms, but primarily fishing and fishing industry.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of tree canneries for fish products.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a shipping center. The big ships did not have to go into Måløy, but in bad weather they did because of smooth water. Because Måløy is on an island.
Mm-hmm.
Now they have a bridge across, but that time you used boats. So we saw traffic every day in the week,
mm-hmm.
you know, big boats, little boats.
Mm-hmm.
So.
What were your parents' names?
My mother's name was Olga, and my grandfather's name was Thorvald. He died the year I was born,
mm-hmm.
and my mother died when I was 7 and a half.
And
my grandparents was Hanna Haldur Gutterberg, and they were kind enough to keep a kind of a wild kid and raised me.
Mm-hmm. That was your mother's parents?
Yes,
then?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work did your father do?
He was a baker.
A baker. Mm-hmm. What about your grandparents then? What do you...
My grandfather used to make fishnets,
mm-hmm.
make new ones or mend the old ones.
Mm-hmm. Was that the one you lived with,
yeah.
or the other
mm-hmm.
one?
Mm-hmm. No, the one I lived with.
Mm-hmm.
I have a little knowledge of my father's parents because they lived in different part of the country, and I never did get acquainted with them.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what they did for work, as far as?
No,
that?
I don't.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Did you have brothers and sisters?
No, this is it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. What can you tell me about your grandparents, the ones, of course, you knew them well, grew up with?
My grandfather was born in that part of the country and walked the island, and he went up to Lofoten fishing, and some fellows he fished with had half a dozen sisters, and my grandfather married one of them. She came from Saltenfjord near Bodø, northern Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And they lived in Bodø, had five girls. And one year my grandfather was fishing, my mother was 5 years old, was two younger, two older children, and then the flu epidemic hit, and three of the little girls died. My mother, who was the middle one, and my aunt was the only one left.
Mm-hmm.
And then my grandmother, the doctor told her she'd better leave that part of the country. There was odor, it was so cold, they couldn't even bury the little bodies in the spring.
Oh.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
And that, by a fluke, I got to see the old Bodine church in 1974 and the cemetery that's across the road there where they buried all those people. But there was, and my grandmother had got pneumonia, she came down to Måløy, and in 1892, and they settled there,
mm-hmm.
built a house. And my mother done weaving and sewing because she died at a ripe old age of 29.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was raised by the grandparents who I think did a pretty good job. My grandfather was an avid reader,
mm-hmm.
and we had a little library, and I can't find anybody to remember there was one, but there was a little corner in the schoolhouse. Every Sunday he took me by the hand and to go to the library, and he would read. He must have had an uncanny interest in Egypt because I got a large dose of Egypt as I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember when he took a book out from the library for me to read by myself when I was five, and you don't go to school until you're seven. And would you believe it, Uncle Tom's Cabin was the first piece of literature I read by myself.
Uh-huh.
And then when about time you're 12, all the other kids, nobody had any money. You went worked in the cannery in the summertime, you know, things you could do, and then you had money for school clothes, which I did. And I was confirmed in 1914. I went to work full time, so that's the extent of my education. Mm-hmm. And the winter I was going on 20, my aunt and uncle from Canada came home for Christmas, 1928, and convinced my grandmother that it would be the future for me to go to Canada, mm-hmm. which I like to dispute. Anyhow, I left in March of 29.
Okay. We'll go back a little bit too. I wanted to ask about your family name. Had it been changed at any point, or do you know where the name came
No,
from?
The name came from right on the place where my grandfather was, a part of a town called Göteborg, in the sense that everybody who lived there took the name of Göteborg.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing, my husband's family lived on the other side of the island, a little strand where about three houses, and everybody out of that family used the name Färjestrand.
Mm-hmm.
So I really didn't marry so far away from home.
Uh-huh.
I married here in Vancouver, Canada, but we were both from the same island, knew the same people. As a matter of fact, my husband's father and my grandfather were cousins.
Mm-hmm.
So my husband and my mother were second cousins.
Mm-hmm. Then. Can you remember the house where you grew up?
Oh, it's still there.
That? Oh, have you been there?
Oh, sure. Uh-huh. I was there last
uh-huh.
year.
Would you describe it?
Well, after all, it was a two-story house,
mm-hmm.
and had two rooms, the living room and what you call best stew or parlor, and a kitchen, and a little sleeping room.
Mm-hmm.
And upstairs we had two bedrooms, and you had a basement mm-hmm. right by the road. Now you got the roads are close up that is flush with the wall.
Uh-huh. Do you remember how, when you were a child, how you celebrated Christmas?
Yep, Christmas tree and all.
Mm-hmm.
The one Christmas that really comes to my mind was the year my mother died in November. And as you can understand, the parents had got stuck with this kid, and they was, you know, pretty hard on him. And somebody gave me some branches of a Christmas tree, and I tied it on the back of a chair. And I decorated. I was 7.5 years old, and I had several dolls. I was blessed with. I had it. They were poor, but so many people was nice to me, and because I lived in a neighborhood of old people,
mm-hmm.
and I was the only kid. So when I found anything, I got a Christmas present,
uh-huh.
and I put my dolls on the chair, and we celebrated Christmas Eve. And then I heard a knock on the door, and I run because we have Eunice, but you know, he usually won't come to the house, but there was nobody there but a shoebox hung on the outer door. And I take it in, and there was a little marchipan pig. I don't know where the tradition to have the marchipan pig is,
mm-hmm.
but, and a little Santa Eunice in chocolate, and a small doll, and an apple, an orange, and something like that, and nuts and whatnot. And it was tied with a regular piece of twine. And there was something, I have already gotten gift from the neighbors, you know, and from my grandparents. I wasn't suffering. But this one, I never did know who did it. And it stands in my mind, you know, it goes to show little things sometimes take precedence over large things.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I had a doll and a real nice doll buggy. The doll buggy I sold when I was 12. Somebody had promised a girl a doll buggy and got to town, he couldn't buy them. And I kept my doll to her nine dolls. I was 19, and I gave it to a couple of girls who were without a mother. The father had a housekeeper, and they used to come play with my dolls. And when they were leaving for Bergen, when I was 19, and they said, "Does that mean I can't come and see your dolls?" And I said, "It looked like that." And I thought, "Oh, why not?" So I had a doll bed, four poster.
Mm-hmm.
With all the trimmings that my mother had made for me and a couple of dolls, and I put the whole thing together and put a small rug around, tied it up, and gave it to her.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to hear something very interesting? In 1979, I think, no, yeah, I was on the way to Scotland, and on the boat from Molloy to Bergen, there was a man, a young lady, and a baby. And as the young lady went out, the man talked to me, and I said, "Are you English or no?" Well, he says, "I'm Norwegian, living in Toronto." And he says, I just go home every year to see my folks. My name is Nigor. And my name is Holwig. And he says, I have a stepmother. And I started to talk about it, and he was the younger brother of those girls.
Is that right?
I said, I knew they were married, and had a boy was born the day before I left Norway. Left Norway the 9th of March, and the night before, his family had a baby boy. I said, you're that boy? No, he says, he's my older brother. And I said, where are the girls? And he says, why? I said, well, I gave him my most precious possession, my dolls, and the doll bed. He said, you are the lady? He said, I've heard about that for so many years. He said, one is a widow living in Ålesund. I forgot what that one was. Just by fluke, meeting it on a boat, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what an impression that made on them, that this was something like you're getting that present at
Christmas
Eve.
Yeah, this
they,
is it.
This is it. Something in their lives.
And he said they have a summer home out on the island outside of Bergen, and my nephew is a policeman there, or my husband's nephew. But you know, it's little things that come back, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any special customs or folk beliefs that you remember that when you were a child, any other than the Christmas celebrations that you did during
the
year?
Well, big weddings.
Oh,
three
what
days.
Were they like?
3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother, when she first came from Norland, the first wedding she went to was to happen to be the people who was my became my husband's parents.
Mm-hmm.
So the friendship goes back. And she was a good cook, apparently, and didn't like the way they handled things, so she went in and asked if she could help. And she made the gravy, and she made the prune pudding, and apparently it was better than they had. And she became then a very well-known cook in big weddings.
Mm-hmm.
And after my mother died, well, you couldn't leave me stranded, so that's always take Gerda along.
Mm-hmm.
And for every time I went to something like that, I got a new dress and new shoes.
Uh-huh.
So I went into some of the better places.
Mm-hmm.
And up to the time I was 12, and I guess I got too big then to be dragged along.
Mm-hmm.
And Sitnamai, of course, that was the big thing. Where you had always a new dress and long ribbons. And I remember one year I got, my mother was still living there, so I had to be under 7, got a new kind of a dimity dress.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and shoes, patent leather shoes, and it was sleeting, and I went next door to show some old lady my new dress and slid in the mud.
Oh no. Oh no. And what was this dress and shoes for?
17th of May. You don't
go 17th.
Oh, you don't go 17th of May as
mm-hmm.
in old clothes.
Mm-hmm.
No, that was before
not.
People. Not too many had national Brunette costume at the time, and it was Hardanger. You know, the black skirt, red
mm-hmm.
vest, white shirt. And sometimes, you know, two, three girls. One, you borrow this one, and I lend you something else, and then
mm-hmm.
you were dressed up.
Uh-huh.
No, but now, of course, to wear the Norwegian costume is really. I know General Moore was here about a month ago. And he spoke in Måløy for 17th of May in 1976, and I was there too at that time and heard him. Didn't realize I was seeing him in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, two outstanding things from Måløy was the bridge and all the Norfolk costumes that they wore to church.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you went to school then until
to 14.
Until you were 14
yeah.
years old. And then you went to work in the cannery?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What was it like there at the cannery? Can you remember?
Oh, sure. You know, they were primarily sardines and the fish balls that was made.
Mm-hmm.
I had a machine where I put a rubber band that goes on the lid before the lid goes on the can.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very dull.
Yeah. Did you live with your grandparents still?
Yeah,
then?
My grandpa died when I was 15, so it was just grandmother and I, and
mm-hmm.
She was a real old lady. She was 71 the day I landed in Halifax.
Mm.
God, now I'm 73. There's a difference.
Yeah, oh yes. Then you said you remembered about, we were talking about when the First World War broke out.
Yeah.
Could you tell about that?
The little town of Måløy, I had maybe 200-300 people at the time, and it's a horseshoe-shaped bay, and it was a shipping center, so there was a lot of traffic, big boats, tram steamers over and outside in decent weather, but going around Stadt, which is a very treacherous piece of water. You usually went inland as far as you could.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents was cutting the hay, and the place was to become, or what is, the cemetery. Of course, there wasn't too many graves, there was a lot of plain. Because we had a couple of sheep and a cow, because Gerda had her milk, and
mm-hmm.
and we had chickens.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with my grandparents, and the girl next door, her father was the manager of the telegraph station, came running. Her father had just been home for lunch and said that the water's broken up. And she said, you better watch yourself, because everything is going to burn. You know, they had the big guns.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just took to my heels and I ran the kilometer and got home, and my mother was having a coffee, some ladies in for coffee. And I can remember a nice tablecloth, you know, and so I said, the world is burning up and here you're sitting drinking coffee. That's how they got to know about the World War One.
Oh, so you announced to the ladies.
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
And but we had seen the Kaiser the week before. His cruiser or battleship or whatever it was pulled into Mola and stopped in a bay, and it was a beautiful day. And my mother and a cousin of hers took a rowboat. We went there. The band came up on deck and played for us. And he had a couple of smaller auxiliary ships. And the Kaiser came to the railing and waved to us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't mean too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then the war broke out, and we all knew that he had to come back out again, because he went into Norfolk. He was in Lower North, Alton, Norfolk, fishing salmon when the war broke out in World War One. And they didn't have to come into Mola. They went straight out from Norfolk out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
So we stood up in a little knoll above our house and watched, and suddenly we saw this black smoke coming. And that was the Kaiser's ships coming, they were going directly. When you think of it now, how anybody could have blocked off Norfjord and hit the Kaiser right there. Wouldn't
mm-hmm.
it wouldn't have happened today, as
mm-hmm.
he could travel that safely by boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's my memory of that.
Mm-hmm. Do you know then, as the war went on, what effect it had on that area?
Well, it had got an effect immediately, because we were rationed.
Mm-hmm.
The fishing boats that dried the fish at home during the spring, and they spent the bargain in August to sell it. And they took orders, then they came back in with 100 pounds of flour and maybe 100 pounds of sugar that you divided up, you know. And there, I know that one, my mother had given the money to buy 100 pounds of flour, 100 kilo, which is over 200 pounds. And they only got 2 sacks, because it was an immediate rationing.
Mm-hmm.
But they divided up with everybody who has sent money, got the same. And so we were in rationing really from 1914 to sometime in 19. War was over within 18. And I remember the first time my grandfather came home for lunch one day, and he says, see what I could buy? They have just taken rationing off sugar, and he bought 2 pounds of sugar
mm-hmm.
without rationing cut. Shoes was rationing. Margarine, butter, any kind of grain, and you couldn't buy thread unless you bought a cloth, which there wasn't any cloth to be bought. So
mm-hmm.
you saved your thread pieces, and you borrowed needles, and you didn't dare to throw away a needle, because that was your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We weren't hungry at all, because it was just the three of us, and we had a few chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 or 5 sheep and a cow, so that I should have milk when a lot of the children there did not have. Now remember, I ended the war when they brought the Austrian children. And I can't remember too much about that, but then they brought the German children, they brought 50 to Molai and 5 nurses with them.
Were these orphan children?
It was children just was undernourished, just had to have, take them over there and feed them up in the summertime.
Who brought them?
The nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They were brought in by they were accepted by the Norwegian people, bring them in, and they was then billeted in private homes. Some took 2, some took 4.
So these were, the Norwegian people were accepting
yes,
these children
yes, uh-huh. and,
after the war, the ones that were affected by the First World War.
Mm-hmm. And we had our Austrian too, but when it rained, we were told to put on our wooden shoes and our raincoats or warm coats,
mm-hmm.
go out. And here those kids came out in a pair of cotton shorts, pouring down rain. We used to think that those nurses was the most awful people. They used to start in the morning and go out and get the kids up until they got them all, and then immerse them mm-hmm. through town and sometimes down to the water and take a dip in this cool North Sea water. But we were just talking about that fetish class the other night, and he was in Germany later on, and he said the health program they have about exercise and toughing yourself. What we thought about, but those kids started coming back, you know, in the summertime, spend mm-hmm. the summers in Norway. It was just like city cousins coming. Mm-hmm. And one girl, okay, she came back and she didn't have any family, and she managed to get to Norway, and she came so many times they finally had to take her and keep her. Mm-hmm. So that's my experience of that. We had bazaar for the Austrian children. I think we made 23 kroner, which would be about $4 today. Mm-hmm. And so that's very vivid. One time they came with a submarine in tow that was captured, a German sub. Another time came in a sub with the flag on half mast. There had been a naval battle just outside of Stadt. Mm-hmm. And all they found was two bodies, one German and one Englishman. Mm-hmm. And they took them in there to the warehouse and got them ready. And when the day of the funeral, all the school children got free. Mm-hmm. And we went to the cemetery mm-hmm. and watched the funeral. And so the war was a lot closer than people here mm-hmm. realize. It, to your little kids, it's vivid in it.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, again, about these children that were brought. I wonder who organized that. Was there a Red Cross at that time? I think
there was some aid. I understand that Quisling was part of the aid to Russia at the mm-hmm. time. Fridtjof Nansen got the credit, but Quisling spent a number of years there distributing food mm-hmm. to, especially to children, after the First World War. And then, of course, it was done in the Second World War. And the people in Norway was neutral, First World War. But they were very conscious of people starving, you know,
yes.
special
oh.
children.
Mm-hmm.
So I have memories about that. And when I did tell you about my memory when the Titanic went down.
Yes, how was that then?
That was
1912.
1912, I was at the ripe age of three. My aunt was packing to go to Canada. And the newspaper came out. We had a four-page paper came out once a week. And I remember it had red headlines, Titanic. Sunk, or you know, I can't remember words. And my mother and my grandmother was looking, and she says, "We can't like Augusta see this lapsetter." So they looked and read the top of the paper and rolled it up and lifted up the lid on the wood stove and put it in there.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was three. That is my earliest memory of anything significant.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I was always picking up cats.
Mm-hmm.
I've had cats all my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you continued, did you work at the cannery until you came to America?
Yeah, to Canada. Yeah,
okay.
I quit and I left
when,
home.
Why did you decide to leave Norway?
Well, I had hoped to go to Portland someday. But the quota was, I think if I remember right, about 330 a year from whole Norway. Well,
what year was this?
1929. Yeah. My aunt and uncle came home for Christmas, and they had a daughter 5 years younger than me. And uncle said, if you want to go with us, he says, I'll pay your way, and you can stay with us as long as you, and I'll pay you so much a month, $25 a month. And you can help your aunt. Well, I wasn't crazy about going, because this prairie didn't particularly intrigue me. But my grandmother thought that would be a real nice thing to do
mm-hmm.
for me, because she was getting, as I say, old. She was 71 the day we landed in Halifax. And she thought, well, she wouldn't worry about me.
Mm-hmm.
So we left Morley on the 7th of March, left Bergen the 9th, went to Southampton, took the train to London, spent 3 days in London, then off to Southampton and boarded a ship that went across the channel to Cherbourg, France, where a lot of Polish people came on.
Mm-hmm.
And from there to Queenstown, Ireland, and then to the, and I was quite a sailor. Nothing bothered me. It was
mm-hmm.
beautiful weather.
Mm-hmm.
But the morning when we were out in open sea after Ireland, I went to the dining room, and the waiter asked us what we wanted. And I said, ice cream, and by the time this is breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
By the time he came with ice cream, I was long gone, and mm-hmm. I didn't see the dining room for 8 more days.
Oh.
I never set foot there. I was really sick.
Uh-huh.
And then we woke up one morning, and a calm seas, and the boat was still, and somebody says, I think we're in Canada. And so we got up on deck, it was nice, and we were in Halifax. So we got out of Halifax that evening for, and it was snow in March. The 23rd of March we landed there, and we sent a telegram home to my grandmother that we were got safely that far.
And what year was this?
29.
29, uh-huh.
And we boarded an immigrant train, which had to pull in on the sidings whenever another train came. And it took on water here and coal there. And, well, anyhow, middle of the night, somebody, I don't know what language they spoke, could be, I imagine it was French-Canadian,
mm-hmm.
and told us to get off the train. And it was so icy that we had to form a human chain, you know. Well, they got a hot bearing and the wheels wouldn't go around. And we had been in the middle of the train, and we formed a link and got on, walked the full length and got in on the last car. Well, in the morning, my aunt went in. They had the wagon next to ours, a car next to ours. And she came in and she couldn't find me. And then somebody explained it to, because she lived in Canada a number of years, and that we were on a different car. So we stopped here, there. The only thing I can really remember is North Bend, Ontario, which was supposed to be a big town.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got to Winnipeg. And then we changed to another train for Saskatoon, and left that night for out down on a place called Flaxcomb. And it was just, snow was melting, it was just messy. And somebody, my uncle's brother and somebody else, we were quite a few, came and got us in a car. It was touring cars, and we got stuck in the mud, and everybody had to get out and push.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into a farmhouse. They had a young Norwegian boy that stayed there for the winter. So the house was warm and all, and there was a cola lamp on the kitchen table. I knew how many horses they had, and I know that they had a section of land for wheat, and I knew everything, but I hadn't asked about electricity, because we got electricity when I was 5. I said to my aunt, oh heavens, a cola lamp. She said, it's not, it's an Aladdin lamp. I'll never forget. So she said, in the morning you could see town from here. So I got up in the morning, it was Good Friday. I got up and I couldn't see any town. It was a mile and a half to one neighbor, mile to another one, and a mile and a half to another one. And so she said, if I go upstairs and look, and I saw 3 grain elevators,
mm-hmm.
not very big. That was town. A blacksmith shop, a one-room schoolhouse, the station master's house, and a kind of a general store.
Uh-huh.
And it was muddy, so what they did, they tore up cardboard boxes for put on the sidewalks, wooden sidewalk, and in the store,
uh-huh.
and inside. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you weren't too impressed with
very,
Canada
very,
when you got
no,
there?
Very
no.
little. I
yeah.
was out there, and so then we got warm weather and dry, and it never rained, and never rained. And my aunt and uncle took his sister and somebody else from family came from Stoughton, Wisconsin, and took him to Bend for a stampede. And my cousin and I, we kept house, and you got company, you always got company on Sundays if you didn't go any place.
Mm-hmm.
And we got about a 10-minute rainstorm, and they couldn't leave because you couldn't drive in it.
Mm-hmm.
You walk to the little place out in the backyard,
mm-hmm.
you have 3 inches of mud. You were taller, but each step you were a little taller, score of mud. So then that was all the rain we had, and then on about the 2nd of October we got snow. We had 3 steps to go down from the back porch in the summertime. By Christmas you had 3 steps to go up to get on top of the snow pile. We did have lutefisk for Christmas, and we did have a Christmas tree, but my impressions, I guess it's all right, just stuck there, you haven't got money to go. So I stayed up 14 months, and then I went on to Saskatoon to be on my own. Got a job for $15 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And you had Thursday afternoon and Sunday afternoon off. Well, can you do it 50 cents a day? Even in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You silk stockings are just coming. You know, first pair of silk stockings cost me $2 and that would took me 4 days of work.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there for 14 months.
Mm-hmm. What work did you do there?
Housework. What else?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I worked for a Jewish
family. Did you speak English?
No. But necessity, you picked up two words today and three tomorrow, and pretty soon you could put it together and you had a sentence.
Did you have any problems with that because of the language?
Certain words, and you know the word, this, you're going to make me laugh at this. The word that threw me most was the word toy. I worked with a Jewish family, had four children, and I was told to make the kids pick the toys up.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't so far from Norway for, you say, lake a tie. And this was toy. I took the old gal there a long time ago. So then I went to, I didn't work for them so long. I got a job with somebody who had college students.
Uh-huh.
You got room and board for $28 a month. Going to the University of Saskatchewan. Then I wanted to go to, some of the girls were in the dust storms.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw a dark cloud and you had clothes on the line, you just run like everything, get it in, because if you got that dust in, you can never get it out of there. I got to tell you a sad story, and Mrs. Luke, and I think she came from Jøvik, she had come over earlier, and he was a bricklayer, and they had a nice home in Saskatoon. But she came, and he wasn't to meet her, and she had four kids. And then when he showed up, they had the riverbank was high, it was houses up above. And they put the water went down and down all summer, so you put the shack or three walls next to the riverbank.
Mm-hmm.
and corrugated iron on top. That was your house. And you had to drink out of this dirty water in Saskatchewan River, and you had to wash your clothes in it. So in the fall, he had a place out, and he bought a farm, and he went out there, and it was just a shack, which nearly everybody, my uncle had one of the few good houses. And here, when it starts snowing, it melted snow, and the snow is so dry that you fill a barrel of snow, and then you have 3 inches of water when it melts. But anyhow, she finally got enough clothes, water, to wash her beautiful hardiner. She had hardiner in all her sheets and pillow slips and all. She got it out on a line, and a little wind breeze came, and the whole thing went on the ground. Broke out every corner. I saw those, all the sheets, pillow slips, tablecloths, everything was minus two corners.
Oh, dear.
It just broke out. A clothespin with the little corner was left on the line, everything else on the ground. So you learned earlier that you don't leave it close on the line there in that, 45 below.
Oh, it'd be brittle.
That's it. It's just, and when you went out, and I went out in Saskatoon, and you wash clothes, and you get on the line, took a sheet and strung it out as far as your arm would go, and somebody else opened the door, and you went to the line, and you stuck it on there, and it stuck. It froze, so you couldn't take it. You couldn't take a basket out of clothes. You took one thing at a time.
So when you were doing housework, was that part of your doing
that you did
work?
It. And on Mondays was wash day, and if you didn't have the clothes on the line by 7 o'clock. You were a disgrace.
In the morning?
In the morning.
Oh,
and you heated water under. The first job I had was a Jewish family, and I had to get up 4:30 in the morning, and they had a stove to fit the copper boiler.
Mm-hmm.
That had fire going in there at 4:30 in the morning. Because the clothes had to be lined at 7, and then you made breakfast after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, that was life. Anyhow, I was in Saskatoon 14 months, and then some of the girls are going to Toronto, and they said, it's better jobs, more money, and no dust storms. So God, I went. My aunt, promised my aunt I wouldn't go, but I went. And I got a job there the first day. Just for a month, somebody needed one, and then I got a job in a doctor's family. And the only person that knew where I was my grandmother. I didn't let anybody, I used to have quite a correspondence link, including the man I later married.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I was there a month or two, and I got a letter from him from Portland. He says, have you lost your mind? You're supposed to come to Portland, you know. He says, I couldn't hear from you. I didn't get my letters back, and I didn't get an answer. And so he says, I wrote to your grandmother, and she told me where you were and gave me the address. He said, you've got to come out on the West Coast. You haven't seen nothing to see in the West Coast. I said, I've seen all I want to see west of the Atlantic. And I don't know, I hadn't figured out how to get past Halifax, but anyhow, anyway. So he said, I'll make a bargain. You come out here, and I'll see. I'll pay for you to go back home if you can't take it. So best offer I had so far.
Mm-hmm.
So in December, I left. I came, took the train, and set up all the way from Toronto, left on Monday and came to Toronto to Vancouver, BC on Saturday night. I hadn't been to bed all week. And they called him and said, well, of course, nothing opens Saturday, nothing opens Sunday. So Monday I went to the immigration to see if I could get a, this time, boy, I was cautious. I just wanted a 1 month permit.
Mm-hmm.
He said, like heck you do, and he threw the passport across the room. He said, it's made it valid to travel in Canada, period. He talked to the Norwegian consul, who was a little German, and he said, well, you okay it, and I'll sign it, because it'll cost $8, and boy, you know, that $8 is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I got stuck there for Christmas. And Ingvar came up Christmas morning, which was on a Friday,
mm-hmm.
and then, of course, Saturday and Sunday couldn't see us. I went and talked to him on Monday. He says, well, you couldn't see why I would have to come in as an immigrant from Norway, in spite of her being interned in Canada almost 3 years. And he says, bring her in. And I came in the door, and they said, you again?
Oh, dear.
So anyhow, he pulled a few, well, you have to have so many affidavits. And then every morning I would get a call, go 12th floor of Marine Building in Vancouver. And finally, I had preliminary papers on the 14th of January, because he said you got to apply for a marriage license, because you've been here, you have to be here 10 days before you apply. A lot of people didn't, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you lie, but they had us on the hook, so you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied for it, and he came up on the 14th, we got married on the 15th of January, and it was on a Friday again. He just made the office. He said, why don't you come and talk to us before you get married? You could go back, she stays. Ingvar said, no. He said, I brought a car and I want to take her and whatever belongings she has. So then it snowed. And it snowed Saturday and Sunday. Monday we went back. And he says, well, I've got to send a telegram to Norway, you know. And Ingvar said, that's all right, I'll pay for it. And he sent it Monday. He came back on Tuesday out of 329 immigrants. I got my traveling papers. And then it took exactly a week before after I got married. I got in, I could leave on Friday morning. And when I got to the border, they took the trunk out and dumped everything on the sidewalk. Nothing doing, you know, because it was, that not that many, it was prohibition here, and they were looking for traps. You know. So finally we got going, got into Portland about 7 o'clock at night, and across Broadway Bridge, and I made it, and Ingvar said, down there is a railroad station, and I have a shop, you know, about 10 blocks up, close to the art museum. And I made up my mind, boy, it's not going to be long before I go and go on that railroad station.
Mm-hmm.
If I have to go with just what I got on my body, I'm not going to stay here. And that was 50 years ago, last January, I was still
here. You're still here.
So he had a bad heart, but he lived for 30 and a half years.
Mm-hmm.
So he passed away almost 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He had three children,
mm-hmm.
and I got four grandchildren and one great-grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go back to Canada for 23 years. Boy, I was scared of that Canadian border.
That was enough of that.
Yeah.
What was your impression of Portland then? That you at first didn't like it? Or what did you...
It
was winter, of course, when you came.
Well, it wasn't bad. We didn't have any snow, and there was a little rain and so on. And Ingvar had an errand boy, he was junior in high school. And he was not allowed... I don't suppose he had a driver license or anything. And Ingvar says, here, take the car, here's the keys, take Gerda for a ride. So I got to, you know, he showed me all the virtues of Portland.
Mm-hmm.
He was junior, and I was 23.
Mm-hmm.
And this month he's finishing his 41 years as a priest.
Oh, is that right? Oh,
yeah.
Goodness.
So, he's a monk also. But anyhow, I would cry, cry. And come on morning, 5:30 Sunday morning, come on, let's go down to the beach, pouring down rain. And I said, nothing, that's what, never can tell, might be nice. That I ate more sand than you ever know. They had to eat on the beach no matter how bad the weather was.
Mm-hmm.
So I had the two on them, and I was sitting crying.
Mm-hmm. You were lonesome for Norway?
Oh,
then?
The whole time I was in Canada, first 5 years in Portland, every night I went to bed, I said, well, one night less. But you see, 3 years after I come to Portland, see, my grandmother died.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had nothing over there, because England had family.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Norway in 58 for the first time.
How did you feel about it then when you got there?
It felt normal in some way, but of course Norway had changed a lot. They've had the war. They were still short of a lot of things. I was in 58, the war had been over there a long time, but you could still feel the effect of it. And we got a most hearty welcome. Well, I had so many people give me clothes to go to Norway instead of two, that we sent 202 boxes of clothing to Norway. To first start out with his relatives and my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said, well, gee, that was some, here's a small clothes I wonder if I could use. So I kind of meeny, meeny, miny, mo.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the first box was only 11 pounds, but pretty soon we could get up to 20 pounds. And we had a cleaning shop, had boxes stacked, clipped the ceiling with clean clothes. So just, we packed six boxes on Wednesday night and mailed them on Thursday. So I figured alone we put out about $500 in postage. Not because we could afford it, but we had made a promise. Norway was invaded and we couldn't get in touch with anybody, that if there was anybody alive that we knew, I'd see what we could do for them.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came home, we were treated very royally.
Oh, I can imagine. Was it kind of a relief society that was formed here then, or
well,
was it just a group of people?
They had a Norway relief, but this was us.
This was
your,
was on
your
own?
I, yes.
Uh-huh.
And one of my girlfriends wrote me a letter, and she said, I hate to be a beggar, but she said, I haven't got it. She was a little bit of a thing. I haven't got a dress to go to Salvation Army. We loved Salvation Army when we were young. And she said, I just got the new baby, and there's no baby clothes. But somebody had told me that she had got a new baby, and I could tell her that the package was already on the way.
Oh, my.
That was just the coincidence. It's just things that happen. And I'm very thankful I did it. Well, then we were home in 58, and then our girls said, well, make a plan to go in 2 years, we'll go too. So we went back in 1960. And it's a little easier. The first is kind of a dry run. You don't know, people come and say Tante Gerda, and you don't know who they are. Well, the grandchildren to my friends or
mm-hmm.
something like that. And I had grandchildren myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time we were with the two girls, they said, well, we don't want to ever go to Norway unless we can be there where Daddy is. He was born in an old house that's still standing, still in good use. And it's over 240 years, something like that. So my son went to Norway in 64 after his father died in 62. So he saw it, and three of his four children have been in Norway.
Oh, so the whole family then has been.
Pretty much,
uh-huh.
Yeah. The girls. And one of the girls passed away, so I have one son and one daughter left.
Mm-hmm. Did you, and then your husband had a cleaning shop?
Yeah.
Did you work in that shop?
Yes, I did. First it was because I was too lonesome to stay home. And then as I got used to it, then it got to be a necessity.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent 30, over. I kept it going for about 3 months after he died. So I was just 1 month short of 31 years.
Mm-hmm. Then what are your children's names?
Well, my son's name is Harvey.
Mm-hmm. Does he live here in Portland?
Yes, he does. Mm-hmm. And he started as an errand boy for a printing company, Irvin Hodgson, when he was 17. He's now 48 years old. And, 49 years old. And he's still there. He's the treasurer for the company. He's been in the same company all the time. Irene is number two, and she got her 25 years in for the government. She's a legal technician for U.S. Attorney's Office. She'd been working for the government 25 years, and the girl who died 5 years ago, she had just got in 20 years with Bonneville.
Mm-hmm.
She was a purchasing agent,
mm-hmm.
and she died suddenly. Neither girls were married. And you know, now looking back, I've had a very interesting life. I used to go to North Hall when I could, but you know, working 6 days a week, they didn't have it. But when after I gave up the shop and all, I spent an awful lot of time over there.
Mm-hmm. We're almost at the end of this. I'm going to turn the stop, and we'll turn the tape over and continue.
Would you like to have a cup of coffee?
All right, you were talking about the Norse club that you joined.
Yes, Norway.
Yeah, could you tell me something about the, did you have contact with Scandinavians quite a bit?
Oh yes, there was one woman from Norfjord I knew, and we went to it was just 50 years last weekend for the 17th of May. I went to Norse Hall for the first time, and I met quite a few ladies, and I can't remember what I asked about. I think really, because I was interested in music, if they had a string band, you know, everybody played guitar in Norway. And you know, if he had something like that, and then I was told, and I never got over that. She said, "God, you're an American now. Forget everything you learned in Norway and be an American." Well, it didn't take an awful lot to forget what I learned. You know, I didn't have that much learned, but I could not see the connection of being an American, a good American, and still use whatever you knew from Norway,
mm-hmm.
and. We had lost about two generations lack of cultural programs. Now they're getting interest. Everybody got to have bunad, everybody got to do Hardanger work.
Mm-hmm.
And the baking, they used to bake for 17 for Lutfisk dinners, period. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Now we bake lefse, we made lefse here this spring, and I understand we sold all of it now.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to get together, and that's some money, you know, make a little money on.
Mm-hmm.
The social club, which is a misnamed because they are a work group, you know,
mm-hmm.
to do things that you can make money on,
mm-hmm.
to help. It's really an auxiliary to North Hall Association, but anyhow, I've been active now the last 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
This year is my year to loaf, and I haven't accomplished anything, not even cleaning the house. See, I never lived alone until July.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter decided she's going to try an apartment,
mm-hmm.
which is working out fine,
mm-hmm.
but I don't cook for myself,
mm-hmm.
You don't eat properly, I don't clean the house,
mm-hmm.
and I've been active with so many things. Not like Monday, I went down to know people, to a nursing home, with a woman from the Park Bureau, to have come to the 17th of May, because there was no Norwegians, there were some Swedes and some Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have Friendship Club on Tuesday. There are many, many days.
Mm-hmm.
And then I go from there to my daughter's apartment for a while and then to class and come home. Thursday I have class. It takes 2 days, you know.
Now this is the ancient Scandinavian
history, 10,000 years B.C. We're not working from 1805 and up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have very little time to loaf. I get myself, I get my nose. I haven't learned to say no when somebody needs me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at Christmas time, I'm very involved in providing cookies for. Well, I started out with one at the old Taft Hotel where they have older people or that is a modest means, you know, and give them a package of cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Then I got roped in to do and see, could you help get a few cookies for down on Burnside, the loaves and fishes served dinner for the downtown chapel.
Mm-hmm.
They needed 150 dozen, but if you could give us a few, well, I made 50
mm-hmm.
dozen cookies, and then I called down there, and they had to call the woman in charge, and she said, we haven't got a cookie from anybody, week before Christmas, and I got everybody, so I provided 175 dozen, a dozen to a bag. I had 100 that year to the Taft, now I'm down to 75. And in the last 2-3 years, I had 8 or 9 3-pound coffee cans full of cookies to go to Bologna Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bologna Joe needs socks,
What's Bologna Joe?
Well, it's part of the Burnside Consortium, you know, to helping. They moved right across the bridge, Burnside Bridge. They're right in the first block.
Is this for the needy?
For the needy man.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them say Burnside bums, but after all, they're human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Then they, after the holiday, and I got some money from different people, so I gave $100 this year to a Loaves and Fishes Burnside project, 50 to the Salvation Army, 50 to Bologna Joe, and then I got another 50 for Joe afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got some socks. They take used socks that's mm-hmm. clean and used, and then you need a headgear because they live on the west side and you walk over there to get their meals and,
mm-hmm.
and spend the day, and you need headgear. Well, one lady called me yesterday and she said the people at her church, she asked if they could knit some caps.
Mm-hmm.
And they said they'd think about it, and she hadn't heard anything, and last Saturday they brought 19 stocking caps, brand new.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, well, Johanna Freddy says, girl, there's sons of Norway conscience. She said, we had Consul General Soli here last weekend from San Francisco. And she said, this is Gerda, she is Portland, she is a sons of Norway conscience. But my grandmother used to do it back home, you
mm-hmm.
know, when you baked, well, take it up to that old lady or somebody who didn't bake or was in bed or something, take it 2-3 eggs over to somebody.
And so helping was a way
that
your
family
did.
Yeah, I think now Norway said, oh, we couldn't do anything like that, it's not poor people. I said, there is, maybe isn't poor people in Norway, but a lot of elderly lives alone and never get them, they can surely have money to go to the bakery, but they haven't got a fresh waffle, they haven't got a piece of lefse,
mm-hmm.
they haven't got a piece of yule cock because nobody does it for them.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody said, so-and-so, he's 90 years old, and I lived alone since I was a kid. He lost his wife, well, his wife, the, lost the boy, and the wife, he kicked her out.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, oh, he's so dirty in his clothes. I said, anybody in those 60 years thought of, say, come on, Carl, get off your dirty clothes and I'll take him home and wash him.
Mm-hmm.
But he can pay to have it washed. I said, that isn't the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Because people sometimes won't do, they need
help.
Well,
you know,
help.
It isn't my job.
Mm-hmm.
And
how would you describe Norwegians?
Well, if you get that, there is several kinds. Someone will work. It's a question if it's your job, my job. It's not the question about the money. It's a question about getting the work done, either in North Hall or in the church or whatever it is. You're social minded and on helping someone to have less than you have. It's a lot of them. And I get this all the time. Now, why should you do it? You've done enough. You don't have to work anymore to help other people. Well, when is enough? There's always somebody who needs you.
Mm-hmm.
For the time you go out the door, you're going to see somebody who maybe can need. And I think that the Norwegians, as well as the rest of the immigrants, came here. They came from modest, and some are from poor farms. And they got into little money and so. Now, whatever I get is mine. I always wanted something, and I'm not going to share with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that I resent, because that is not the spirit of Norway.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the spirit of the Scandinavian period. So I'm a kind of renegade, call that. But I think that Norwegians have made quite a contribution to this country in the work. I remember Governor Snell said he spoke to Sons of Norway on the 17th of May, the year when Norway was invaded, 1940. And he used to be a foreman in the lumber camps, and he said when the newcomers came and looked for work, they never asked how much do you pay. And they would be in the 20s, and they said, have you got a job for me?
Mm-hmm.
At the logging camp. He said, sure, and can you start right now? They knew that if they got a job, there was some money coming in,
mm-hmm.
maybe not a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them did go back in the early 30s because they bought share in North Hall. And then when at the time I came, they used to come in the shop and get a cup of coffee, and coffee pot was always on. And someone was, I didn't know, Ingvald didn't know him. He'd been 6 years, see.
Mm-hmm.
We came from the same place. He left Norway 3 years ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
Then I spent 3 years in Canada, almost 3 years. So we hadn't seen each other for 6 years. And they would come in for a cup of coffee, and they were trying to get some money they had lent somebody or had $100 to share in or so to go back home, just go back, period. And so we lost a lot of good people at the time, but a lot of people done, like carpenters, they done good jobs for a minimum of money. And of course, when I came, you know, a Scandinavian girl could always get work, not that she got paid very much, but she could get a job. And we have a lot of good Swedes and Norwegians in Central Norway and Finns. We don't seem to have quite the same rapport with the Danes for some reason. Then of course there's quite a few American, we have a lot of American born. But once for a while when I came, if you're born in Norway, don't give an opinion because you don't know anything.
Also, you felt there, at first there was some kind of prejudice?
The discrimination was not from the American people, it was from our own, see.
Oh, from the Norwegians that were
Yes, because you just came here. I've been here 10 years. And don't try to teach us. You know, there's some, Norway is a long country. The coastline is as long as from Alaska to Mexico. And each part of the country had their own customs, you know, in baking and many other things. My grandmother came from up north, and she was a good baker. She taught that the people in Norfolk didn't know anything. I've had very interesting things that have happened. I could write a book on things that coincidence that where I was at a time that if I'd taken the boat the day before, the day after, I never would have met the people. And I'm terribly interested in history. I'm very interested in Norwegian literature. And we have a group we call Snakkenorsk, speak Norwegian, where people that speak a limited amount but like to get together and talk Norwegian. And Birgit Hansen started, and then...
And so does that still meet now?
Yes, and they decided to have a little party for the new members that came in last year, as members of Sons of Norway. And I say we had about 75 people there. And we had set up tables. We had about 13 tables, 8 to a table. And the different, I don't know, Snakkenorsk, I got involved to have a table too. And we brought our own refreshments. And then they discussed Sigrid Undset, her 100th birthday. Well, I came to people, set up the program, and I said, when I had to read Sigrid Undset when I was in grade school, that what we had, you know, 12 years old, 11 years old, that old lady, she must have been all of 38 at the time. Because now when she'd been, when we celebrated her 100th birthday, I'm only 27 years younger. Mm-hmm. But I said, it's so unusual. You can have a good speaker, or you can bring out some Norwegian writing. I think all the Scandinavians, you know, somebody said, oh, that's boring, I don't care for it, you know. So you walk out and do something else. They stayed, nobody left.
And you had small group discussions.
Well, they would read their page. In Norwegian, one of the people who had limited knowledge of Norwegian would read it, mistakes and all, and then somebody read it in English, and then you take another page someplace else and do it, and people sat, they sat through the whole thing. And I said, this would be my hope years ago, that you could get the literary group together, somebody who would just, because Norway has a wealth of good reading material. Of course, Sigrid says you can buy in English.
Mm-hmm. You feel there is now, it's almost like a revival.
There is a revival of Norwegian culture, and you can take anything from wood carving, rosemaling, and any kind of sewing and knitting or whatever, and also bring in the literature. Mm-hmm. There is, and the Buna, and I had 3 requests Saturday night for having class for Buna.
What is that?
In costumes, Norwegian costumes. But it is, you know, when I grew up, we only had one that was considered a national costume. That was a black skirt, red vest, white blouse, and white apron. This is Hardanger. Mm-hmm. Well, was Bergen and Fana has similar, but the shape of the vest is different. Mm-hmm. And the braid is different. And I just had some extra braid, and I let one of the girls do it, and I led the vest.
Because they leave the rest they are not. They just are not.
Okay. I'll turn this off for just a moment then. We were just looking at a vest that's from until about the braid, that you can't buy the braid.
Yeah, because it's for a district.
It's a mm-hmm. braid that's for a particular mm-hmm. district, and you can't buy it here. It's just in that
no.
part of Norway. Oh.
So, but...
You've done some work on little research then on the different costumes, or you know quite a bit about the costumes?
Yeah, I just turned off again.
Okay. We've been looking at a wonderful book about showing the different costumes. And it shows the pictures of the regional costumes in the different area. So would you say the name of the book and who wrote it and the publisher?
It is called Vorvakre Bunader. And it came out in the last few years. There used to be a smaller edition of it, but this one has about 28, 30
color pictures.
Yeah. And there is one that came to Portland. She was, I think, at Portland State, Pacific Lutheran, Elsa Bjerk. She was an expert in weaving in Bunad. She was here a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's put out by Jimenez Forlag, and it's edited by Kjersti Skavhaug, and the photos by Arne Svensson and others. And there is a number of Bunad. Some are districts like Sunnmøre have about 7 different.
Mm-hmm.
The one that's mostly used is the Martha Bunad, which is blue. This one has the red vest.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is just like it, except then now this is Vigra, which is also part of Sunnmøre. And they have a number of costumes. This is Jelster, that's from Sinfjord. Some has aprons and some has not. There is a few men's costumes, and I'm really interested in it. It's available from Norway and also through the Sons of Norway have it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a lovely book.
It's a $30 book, but the pictures alone
mm-hmm.
is worth it, you know.
Yes. All right. You talked about the group that you belong to
yes.
that speaks Norwegian. So you still do use
oh,
the
yeah.
Norwegian
if they, we have they have Norwegian classes every year, and then they have the small group. We get together twice a month. One group get together in the forenoon, those that don't want to drive
mm-hmm.
at night, and talk Norwegian. They read poetry, and those that isn't very eloquent on Norwegian, they even take children's stories.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a little skit they put out reading they done over Vancouver last year. We visited the Vancouver ladies. And they read the man that was going to sell it home. The man was going to go keep house.
Mm-hmm.
The wife went out on a farm of work, and they had sod roof.
Mm-hmm.
So he put this cow up there to mm-hmm. eat the grass and tied a rope down through the chimney and around his legs and all of that. And the girl had translated it into English. So one would read it in Norwegian, one would read it in English.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really good exercise. Now, our group here was started by Birgit Hansen, and she came from Norway about 27 years ago, and she's very, very interested in this keeping the Norwegian going.
Mm-hmm.
And we got some of the people who is retired who never spoke Norwegian before that is attending. We have one lady, she's in her 50s. She is of a Southern European extraction, and she does real well. I give a talk on Helle Ristingen is the stone carvings
mm-hmm.
that I ran across in Norway last year. And I want to go back because they have near a place called Hornelen, and it's not very far from home. They discovered them about the time I left Norway in the late 20s, and they have about 3,500 on those carvings. Now they have them in the southern part of Norway and on Trondheim and also in Norland, but they're different. Some of them has animals, boats, and people. What I saw last year in Sinfjord was primarily fish, deer, whale, and no people and no boats. And it was just accidentally I got to see it. I had 14 pictures left on my camera, and if I had my choice, I would have gone in the morning,
mm-hmm.
which would have been a wrong thing to do because I would have the sun in my face. And in order to get a picture, I had this, it's on a slope, on a slate. And I would have to stand up above and take him looking down. As it was accidentally, a young fellow driver says, "Carol, you want to see the hell of resting on it?" He was weak. And he says, "About 10 minutes from here." And I said, "Sure." And I wish I had more pictures. Well, I had 14. I said, "Well, if I get 3, I'll be satisfied." Mm-hmm. And I got 14 out of 14. So I was asked to speak to this group of Snakkenorsk. And I didn't know if they understand my dialect, but they said they did. I spoke a little slower. And I'm terrible, terrible interested. And I have a girl I used to babysit, and she has been in her 60s now. There has been, she is a geologist, and she has been in taking prints of us. She works for University of Oslo, mm-hmm. and she is from the same part of Norway. I didn't get to see her, and I'm going to make arrangements if I ever go back, you know, to see her. Mm-hmm. But they closed it for a year because vandals got in. They even used the jackhammer. So this is called Vingen, near Hornilen, and I understand after I come back that there is a tourist trips that you take by boat, but it doesn't start in July 1. And I've been back here in before 17th of May for 6 weeks to come back, about 24th, 25th of June. And that is my next goal, is to go back there and take in some of that. They don't know how old it is. It could be 1,500 years, it could be 6,000 years mm-hmm. old. And amateur geologists or students have gone there in the summertime, scraping away and then painted red or rust color in mm-hmm. so you can take a picture and have a general idea. Mm-hmm. They just discovered the ones in Norfjord in the late 20s and the ones in Sinnfjord in about 1934.
Also, they haven't been known very long.
Yeah, but the people who live there, I have a friend who came from about 15 minutes drive, and he'd been back several times and nobody told him about it.
Oh,
they figure, my friend says, "Rocks, the Norbert, she's chock full of it. What do you want to go and look at rocks for?"
uh-huh.
Well, anyhow, I looked at rocks and I enjoyed it, and I spoke to them in Norwegian to the class. And I got away from speaking Norwegian to the Norwegians because there is people from Trondheim and Norland and Stavanger and Oslo, and Norfjording doesn't always go very good with.
Mm-hmm. Because of the difference in dialect.
Mm-hmm. But I get along, and I've been back 10 times.
Well, you've been, since you've been here, you married a Norwegian and you've had Norwegian friends. And
yes.
How do you feel about the fact that you did come to America, even though you were so lonesome for so long, lonesome then for Norway? How do you feel at this point about having left Norway?
I think that I would have got along fine in Norway, I'm sure, but I feel kind of lost in some, because things that I'm really interested in, my friends aren't. Mm-hmm. I have lost something in there. When I come home, I talk Norfjording. And I called home last Sunday, the day before 17th of May, and I called three places before I found anybody home, and it happens to be my sister-in-law was visiting her daughter there. And he said, "You're sitting talking, you were here last year for 17th of May. Don't you feel bad that you're in Portland? I mean, you could have been in at home." Mm-hmm. Well, but you lived in a city that had 500,000 people, and you can be alone if you want to mind your own business. And you can get involved.
Mm-hmm.
To have your choice.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go back there and live, which I would dearly, I've always wanted to go back and live there, but you are then limited to what the people say, do, and think, and read, that has lived their same life as the neighbors lived all their life.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, I'm a renegade of something, and don't ask me what, but I'm very happy we now have a cultural committee. And this lady calling from Ketchikan, she was the cultural director, now sister-in-law is, and she said, "You're going to convention?" I said, "No." Well, she said, "We want to see you because we're still hoping that we could afford." And that is because the Norfjord Brunner could easily be made.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
costly.
It wouldn't be authentic when you don't get the right braid, but that braid has passed inspection a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surprising. Now we went to a Pittock mansion at Christmas time, a Scandinavian decorated hall. And I wore that one, and you had some beautiful costume. And those embroidery ones are out of this world,
mm-hmm.
and they are expensive. And I wore this homemade thing, and three ladies sat there, and they were from Longview, and they said, we've been sitting here just looking at the costumes and see what we was most interested in. And I think we're interested in you, especially on account of the aprons.
Because they're very lovely.
My daughter is going to Arts and Crafts and take weaving,
mm-hmm.
and she, her hope is to make some aprons like that for anybody who was interested, because her time is limited being as she's working 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm. Well, these costumes you were saying can cost $1,500 or $2,000.
And there is one, they have a belt. It's silver with a gold wash. And when I was at a convention in North Fjord in America last year, and there was some, most of the women came from Wisconsin and Minnesota. And they talked the type of Norwegian that they talked there when I was a kid. A real kind of... And she came in up to 1 o'clock in the morning, the last night we were there, and said, this girl.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And she said, can, or, as I said in Norse, can do for store for $1,000 for a belt that, can you imagine, $1,000 for a belt? I would think if you paid $100, you really overpaid. And it said, some other ladies tried to tell her that the price of gold and silver is sky high. Uh-huh. Yeah, but who would pay $1,000 for a belt? Now, I was at the church in Molloy last 17th of May, and there was a ladies' chorus there, about 25, and they all wore North Fjord Brunad costume with those belts. Just figure over 6,000 krona a piece.
Oh.
And that is money.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, it's, I like to, you don't have to, it's almost getting to be snobbish, because they got to, you can't wear a regular silver cellular pin, you got to have one that is, it's corroded,
mm-hmm.
because there's certain things you wear gold with and certain things you wear silver with.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And it can run you up in money, and as I say, a similar brunad. With the embroidery and the silver, will run you $1,500. One lady was going to sell hers when she was here, and that had no silver, and that was just the cloth and embroidery, because there's an apron,
mm-hmm.
and there's a fine embroidery on the collar and a shirt. This is a headgear, not too many is using it, but it's quite common now that the mother of the bride and mother of the groom wear them at weddings, and
uh-huh.
they're quite a bit of, used in weddings.
Uh-huh.
And
so that's another real
revival. It's a revival that has got out of hand money-wise,
mm-hmm.
Because there's people. And what I like to see is that they used to have what they called everyday brunette or costume that had a stripe of cotton and a denim skirt,
mm-hmm.
and a blouse and a white apron. But you cannot get the right kind of denim here nor in Norway. And
would you say, share a prayer or a song or saying in your language that you particularly like? Is there any saying that you...
Well, the table prayer is used quite a bit in Norwegian now.
Mm-hmm. Could you say that?
Yeah, but first I'll tell you something happened last Thursday. A lady called me and she said, my mother's in a hospital dying of cancer. She was born in Norway, and her last wish is to have a copy of the Lord's Prayer in Norwegian. Well, a copy is something you can hold in your hand and look at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I can type it out, but it wouldn't be the same. And I said, I'll see what I can do. So I got a couple of phone numbers from her. So I called the Scandinavian design, Mel Iverson, and he was named, but the girl there, she said, well, we have the table prayer, and there is another one. And she said, Father War. And so I said, that's what I want. And she didn't have a car, I don't drive, and just then her daughter got in the shop. And 10 minutes after the lady called, I had it. It's an 8x10 ready for framing. So the daughter came at noon to pick it up. And I said, now, here it is. Does your mother read Norwegian? And she said, no. She came over and she's 4 years old, and her mother taught her the Lord's Prayer, the table prayer, and different things by memory, but she can't read it. Well, I said, it wouldn't do it. This piece of paper isn't going to do her any good. I said, call the chaplain's office, talk to the Lutheran chaplain for St. Emmanuel Hospital, and if he is not available, if there's nobody available, I'll take a cab and come down. Mm-hmm. But you have to call me before 2 because I'm has to mm-hmm. go someplace. Well, I didn't hear. Well, the doctor said it's a matter of hours, but apparently she's still living and haven't seen a death mm-hmm. notice. But that was her wish, and I was able to get hold of the Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm. In them. And the one that we use mostly, that I hear I'm using quite a bit, and it's the table prayer. Yes, nam govita vos, spis dricke for it all, de gud in ära, ostegan, so for imat, yes, nam. Amen. And that is used at Central Norwegian doing. So little groups that get together for use coffee mm-hmm. and they read the Lord's their table prayer.
Well, that is about all the questions I have. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with us?
No. As long as Pacific Lutheran University has done a lot to maintain the Scandinavian traditions, I think. They said that that exhibit wasn't so plentiful this year. I didn't mm-hmm. go up there, but I would like to go. Mm-hmm. And if I have a chance to go up there sometime when the office, when there's no school going mm-hmm. on, or when there is school, I mean. Mm-hmm. I think that we lost two generations. The people who's most interested in the Norwegian tradition now is my grandfather, my grandmother came from Norway. My mother had nothing to do with it. I have a girlfriend here, she came from Minnesota. Her mother's folks came from Telemark. And she was brought up, but I understand there was a movement in the 1912, 1915. Don't have Norwegian newspapers, don't speak Norwegian. Be American. Mm-hmm. Well, you can be American and still keep the traditions. And that had been overlooked, but now some of the one that has the like a ring in here, her grandparents came from Norway. And she went to Pacific Lutheran, and she is very interested in the costumes and in the Norwegian dances. Mm-hmm. And it's been overlooked. And I blame it on the people who came from Norway, say from 1915 and on to by the time I came, because I got it. I felt the discrimination. You're an American. Be an American. I'm an Americanization counselor, City of Portland, and I think I'm as good as an American as anyone can be, and so is my family. But I left them with a certain amount of Norwegian heritage, and they have been back there and seen. You cannot leave Norway in 1910 and then tell the great-grandchildren in Norway they have nothing. Norway is an advanced country. Their furniture, their kitchens, when they remodel, we have a lot to learn. Their table settings. When my son was home in 1 year, this is 77, and we went to a cousin of his, she had just got married the year before. And we were there, we had 5 meals there. We didn't have the same dishes twice. We had those for coffee, then we had dinner, there was something mm-hmm. else. Then we had morning breakfast the next morning, then we had a lunch, which you have the finished glass, blue-green glass. And he says, I hate to have anybody come in my house. Of course, he's batching it.
Yeah.
But this is it. The living standard is high. Mm-hmm. And don't let anybody sell the Scandinavian country short when it comes to, they take time for holidays and special occasions. They get together for neighborhood birthday parties and somebody's 50, 60, they don't, anything in between the fives, they don't bother it. Mm-hmm. But when you're 25th, 30, 35, they always, and you're not invited. You have your things ready for your birthday party and the people come because it's your 30th birthday or your 35th birthday or somebody's 95. And I am very happy now to see that they get, start digging into the background of the literature as well. We celebrated Bjørnstjerne Bjørnson's 150th birthday, who is the one that wrote the Scandinavian, the Norwegian national anthem, which is based on a Finnish anthem or a song that was written in the early days. That's what they learned from Madsen. And I think if people would have more knowledge of Scandinavian history, because right after the Ice Age, there was no Norwegian, Swedes, or Danes. There was people up north. There wasn't even countries. There were land with people on it. You didn't specify. Those are Swedes. Those are Norwegians. Then they got to be the Norsemen, all of them. And then Finland came into it, where the Finns have very little knowledge. There's very little history of Finland until the Reformation. And then there is Iceland, where you find perhaps a lot of Norwegian background. A lot of it knew from high school, from grade school, because my teacher used to go to Iceland or to Denmark every summer. She alternated. And she came back and brought it to us, and it stuck with me. And if I've been any help to you.
Well, you have. You've had a very, so encouraging to hear someone who is so interested in the culture.
I am, and that doesn't mean
it just takes a few people to.
Yeah, you get to go ball going with to see what Birgit Hansen had done with Snakkenorsk. The older people that never learn Norwegian, they don't want to go to Norwegian classes, they don't want to study, but at the same time, they want to practice the little they know and pick up a few more words.
And what a good way to do it.
I think it is.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for your time and for this interview. You've been very gracious. Thank you.
You're welcome.